Good morning, New Covenant, or whenever you might be listening to this teaching. My name is Jeff Trask, and as always, it's my honor and privilege to be able to share with you today. As usual, I'm going to start with covering some things. This is my last teaching. If you follow along in my slides, the first one you'll see is a picture of my passport, and Deontisa's passport. And the reason why you're seeing those is that I finally got my passports back a little bit ago. I unfortunately was not able to go to Ghana because the Ghanaian embassy in Washington, D.C. hijacked my passports for over a month. But thankfully, my brother did arrange to have a family Ghana synagogue trip planned for January 2028. So I'll still have it in the books and plan to go, just delayed. But I'm glad I got the passports back because I was worried about that. But instead of going to Ghana, I was able to do a few other things during that time. One of them is to take a week and be in St. Louis. A lot of Tisa's family lives there, and it was good to go back and visit with people. Also got a chance to go to the St. Louis Arch, which I hadn't been in since I was a little kid. And the arch picture I have there, it just reminds me of just a saying when it talks about justice. In 1853, there's a sermon titled "Of Justice and the Conscience." And it was by an abolitionist named Theodore Parker. And he said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. But from what I see, I am sure it bent towards justice." That is the original sermon that Martin Luther King Jr. Had kind of shortened to say, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And this first concept emphasized how our conscience should be leading to a world towards justice, that our very way of our thinking should lead towards justice. And then King kind of emphasized the part about how we have an active role to play and engage in to bend that arc towards justice as well. And I tell you, it'd be a nice world if our arc of justice bent as sharply as the St. Louis arch does the St. Louis in this picture here. In addition to St. Louis, I got a chance to kind of spend some vacation time in Chicago. Was able to go to the President Obama Presidential Center, not the museum part because those tickets are out for a few months, but the grounds are free and available, and it was pretty nice to walk around that area and just be reminded about how, you know, this is a symbol really of some of that progress of that arc bending towards justice that I just mentioned since Theodore Parker and Dr. King's days. We still have ways to go, but it's nice to see something like that there. Also got a chance to go to the Willis Tower, which, you know, is funny. As a kid growing up and going to Chicago so many times, I always saw it a million times and never actually been in it. So finally took the time to actually go inside. Went all the way to the top 103rd floor, not the top, but the 103rd floor, 1,353 feet up in the air. That's 3.2 Eiffel Towers, 4.6 Statue of Liberties, and nearly 4 football fields tall. You know, often when I was up there, you can see all the city. I often marvel about how many people live on this planet. And in the view you see from this picture certainly illustrates how many people there are. However, at the same time, I do find it interesting how you typically have a much, much, much smaller group of people that tend to seem to be working towards various causes, and even a smaller group of people working towards justice. I even often wonder, you know, even locally, what would happen if, say, half the population was truly engaged in efforts towards justice. You know, I think we have about, you know, 110,000 people in Champaign-Urbana outside the university. Imagine if we had 50,000 people show up to city council meetings and fight for whatever. I'm sure whatever was fought for would actually happen. Not to say that I'm not encouraged by the fact that we get about 20 to 25 or so people that come out to our monthly reparations meetings, and we have over 400 people on our email list that's keeping up what the coalition is working on and being involved. This is no reason why we couldn't have hundreds at our meetings and have thousands tracking everything online, being on email lists. You know, even with the State Reparations Commission, there's been a limited number of people that have come out to public hearings, you know, and I just think that what would it take for our world as a whole to be more engaged with justice? While I was on vacation and getting away, my grandkids were hard at work. So I was trying to picture my grandchild Amaya doing her math at her school, and another picture of my grandson Amari doing some math work, which I've been so nice to see. them doing their doing these kind of activities here in Champaign. And it kind of reminds me of something Professor Sundiata Chachua has been sharing with the Champaign City Council members about justice. You know, he's been giving them an analogy about how, you know, if a child ends up snatching a toy away from another child, one of the things we do to kind of address that is that we have the child that did the harm to return the toy to the other child. And we have the child apologize for snatching the toy. And then we have them both kind of make up and shake hands. And so even as young children, this concept of justice can be taught, you know. And so I just wonder, you know, how can we bring that to more and more people and bring that to the table? I'm sure you might be thinking, like, you know, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so to Jeff, everything looks like justice. But it's just the way it is for me. And so today, I want to actually kind of think about this idea of justice being a common thing, being a normalized thing, justice even as a lifestyle. And so my title is Justice Because, kind of playing off of the whole concept of just because. Micah 6:8 says, God has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. So you think about this idea of justice because, the idea of just because is doing something that we don't need a special occasion for, something that conveys feelings or sentiment for someone or something, just because. You know, there's no need for a special occasion, a special event to express this desire to see something come to fruition there. You know, the idea is that the feelings you have for something are ongoing, they're consistent, and they're meaningful. So why not justice because? What are things that are keeping us from having justice be this ongoing presence as opposed to maybe something we do on special occasions? There are more reasons that I can think of, but I'll just name a few, particularly in this teaching. And I want to also highlight the fact that Joseph is going to be our main character that we're going to be looking at in terms of how he managed to be a certain way that allowed him to practice mercy and grace and justice despite some of the things that happened to him. But before we get into how Joseph did that, I want to talk about, you know, why we tend not to do that. One is that we are not treated fairly ourselves. And sometimes not feeling being treated fairly yourself leads you to not feel like others should be treated fairly, or that if you can't get it for you, what's the point of you fighting it for other people? Another reason why we don't consider justice a lifestyle sometimes is that we get callous. We are unfortunately are normalizing a lot of crazy things in our society. And sometimes by normalizing these crazy things, you grow a certain sense of callousness about it. And it's a condition all human beings have to face. It's something that's not easy to fight against by any means. I often marvel how there are some good doctors and great teachers and great nurses and other people who have to deal with folks in day in and day out, and how many of them manage to not get callous about different people they see. They don't see it's like a, you know, you can easily turn into a robot having to deal with one person after another. But the ability not to get callous to that and to still, you know, see every person as an individual and every person mattering is a true gift. And so we deal with that when it comes to this idea of justice as well. Another barrier is selfish ambition. You know, when things can benefit you in a certain way, sometimes making sure that things are fair and just for everyone is not a priority. You may even think that if things are fair and just for everyone, that you cannot get the things that you want to get. And so that selfish ambition sometimes clouds our ability to do justice on an ongoing fundamental level. And then the last thing I'll highlight about why not just justice because is because this idea that justice can be conditional. And as getting an example, you know, a lot of times I push back on folks who say, I'm not going to give money to that homeless person because all they're going to do is either buy some cigarettes or some alcohol. And I push back because I ask that person to think about, you know, why they actually give to that houseless person. Do they give because they're concerned about where the money is going, or do they give because God or something had led on their heart to give to that person? I hope it is the latter, because that's how we should dictate our giving is what we feel God is calling us to do, not based on the actual outcomes or result. And after all, I find it kind of weird that we put certain conditions on giving in that sense, particularly you think about a houseless person. I mean, do you expect them to take that dollar or $5 and go to a bank and put it down for a down payment for a house? Are we expecting some kind of responsibility like that? Also, do we consider the fact that, you know, other people smoke cigarettes and other people drink alcohol? And then while not advocating for any kind of addictions or anything like that, the reality is that there are people too. And who knows, you know, while we may be able to take a 2-week vacation somewhere, maybe their vacation is that cigarette. Maybe it is that drink of alcohol. Who knows? Again, I'm not advocating for addiction or anything like that, but the idea that we may refuse to give support and help to someone because we're worried about them wasting their money in some form or fashion, it seems problematic, particularly when it comes to homeless, houseless people. And then I hear the same arguments even in the reparations world, where even Black people will say, well, if Black folks get this money, I want it just either be wasted or want it go right back into the quote unquote system. And I say, so we don't want to acknowledge the harms and try to provide compensation for those harms because of how the money will be spent exactly. You know, it'd be nice that every reparations dollar was used for something, quote unquote, good, which you got to ask who's determining what that definition is. But at the end of the day, the reparation, the money itself and how it's spent is not the point. The point is justice. And so to do justice on a regular, unconditional, ongoing basis, we have to stop putting conditions on it. Why can we go towards this idea of justice because and making it normalized in our lives? I think Joseph gives a great way to approach this whole notion of how you see things. And what I mean by that, we know the story of Joseph that he had dreams and, you know, he thought his dreams told him that his brothers would be bowing down to him one day. And it upset his brothers to a point to where they were decided to sell him out and enslave him, you know, to someone else. And then Joseph went through a difficult life and being in prison and doing all kinds of things, but persevered through it all to ultimately become only second to Pharaoh in the whole country of Egypt, with the most powerful country at the time. And so ultimately, you know, the story goes, we know Joseph, you know, stores up food for this famine that he predicted and was in his dream. And lo and behold, his brothers are coming to him to get some help. And this whole saga happens, but ultimately his brothers return with his younger brother, Benjamin, and they have this reunion and all things are happy. But what particularly is fascinating about this story, and particularly how Joseph responded to all this, is his perspective. You know, because first of all, we got to acknowledge that, you know, Joseph is genuinely grateful and happy to be reunited with his family. I mean, he could have potentially thought that they wouldn't have accepted him. I mean, after all, he was in this foreign land. He'd been gone all these years. He wept, you know, almost uncontrollably and so loudly that all the servants outside the room heard him. And so there was some sense of relief that he must have had just even being accepted by his family. And so despite that level of power that he had, he still had that sense of want to be accepted. The other thing that Joseph did and was, you know, pretty remarkable is how he viewed his brother's actions as God's plan, almost as if his brothers didn't have a choice in the matter. And it goes to show you just how much your perspective matters and how you approach things. You know, when it comes to Joseph, he imagined that the only thing that could have happened was that his brothers sold him into slavery because he had a bigger purpose in mind. God had in mind to put Joseph in this position so that he could eventually save his family in the long run. Joseph's first thought is to make sure that everyone's okay and assure them that they will all be okay, you know, which, I mean, kudos to Joseph. I mean, if I was sold into slavery and had to spend all these years being a slave and then endure all the stuff that I had to endure, all because my brothers was hating on me because I had dreams, and then to see him again and only be welcoming and only be loving and only assure them that they'll be okay. That was a mighty thing for Joseph to be able to do. And he did it because of his faith in God and this perspective that he had. And then, of course, he also gives God the credit for the position that he was in, despite him going through so much to get there. And then I will finally imagine that, you know, I had a myriad of thoughts about what might have been going through Joseph's brothers' minds. You know, I would imagine that they were a combination of extremely fearful, right? Because Joseph had absolute power and had all kinds of reasons to use that power against them. at the same time, they probably had this overwhelming sense of being grateful. You know, it's almost like they won the $1 billion lotto, you know, like the person that won the $1 billion lotto recently. I mean, because imagine the odds of Joseph going through being sold as a slave to going from that to being the Lord of Egypt. So you had this, probably this fear, you had this gratefulness. And then, of course, you probably had some major guilt. You know, if his brothers had any kind of heart at all, which they showed that they did, and they were sorry and they were guilt filled about when they saw Joseph and was faced with what they had done to him. And I would maybe say, you know, being human beings, they probably was even a bit jealous, right? Or maybe very jealous, because here's this brother of theirs that they literally sold into slavery because he had dreams about them bowing down to them. And sure enough, here it's happening in real life. So they probably had all kind of mixed of emotions going on there, but it is what it is. And even when it comes to Joseph's dad, imagine that his dad had to feel like President Obama's parents, right? You know, how proud would a parent be and how shocking it would be to see your child achieve something that seemingly was impossible, you know, like in President Obama's case, becoming the first black president of the United States. Or in Jacob's case, seeing his lost son, thought to be dead a long time ago, popping up as the Lord of the most powerful nation in the world. So what was it with Joseph that would allow him to do that? Well, and it can allow us to kind of maintain this perspective of justice, regardless of any kind of things that we come up against. One, he made the best of his situation whenever he was in the situation, while he was in prison or being framed or all the things that he had to endure. He tend to make the best of it. He didn't give up hope. He had kept his faith in God, and he kept trying to, you know, do whatever he felt God was leading him to do. Joseph also treated people well, even those that hurt him. That's another quality I think is required for us to have lives of justice, is that we got to be able to not let the pain of the hurt that we experience translate into us not being either being apathetic or not extending grace and mercy and love to others. Another thing that Joseph did, he had a drive to keep putting himself out there. I mean, you think that, you know, your dreams got you sold into slavery. You might stop the whole dream thing after a while, but he still used those same dreams eventually that got himself out of prison and got him to the position in the Egyptian court that he was able to attain. So he could have got gun shy and you know, kept to himself after that, but he decided to keep putting himself out there. And again, it's something that I believe is required. If you want to have a life of justice, you got to keep putting yourself out there. He also found the joy in victories and shared his success as well. I mean, it was, you know, he cried just uncontrollably when he got reunited with his family, and he celebrated those good things that happened to him. And then last and probably most importantly, he held on to his faith in God. It would have been so easy for Joseph to give up and to just let life, you know, pass him by based on what was happening to him. But his faith and that God had a plan and had intention for him to do a certain thing allowed him to keep going. And in our lives, the road may be rocky, and I will say the water may be choppy. This picture I'm showing is a picture of when I went to Lake Michigan. I got invited to go with a small group of people on a little private yacht in Lake Michigan by Ron Ruth Simmons. Tisa and I was able to spend a little time on a lake and seeing the city from a distance and so on and so forth. But it surprised me just how bumpy and how choppy the waters was just on the lake. I thought lake's supposed to be nice and calm. And I'll tell you, that little yacht we're on, it was bouncing all over the place. And it's almost like I felt like pursuing justice feels that way. You know, there's some nice, wonderful elements that's involved with doing something like that. You know, you get the chance to spend time with people and connect with people. You get a chance to, you know, eat and all kind of good stuff there. But everything you do on that little ship is difficult because of all the rocking, you know. So despite you trying to enjoy things, you are having to eat, moving back and forth, having to walk and go upstairs back and forth and trying to use the bathroom, all those kind of things that are much more difficult to do when you're constantly rocking. But you work through it and you do it and you try to embrace the good things, too. And of course, let's not forget about the chilling temperatures in off the lake as well. And there are just these beautiful parts about being having this life of justice. There's some level of like in with the lake, you kind of see the serenity of being in nature, or this kind of cool perspective by seeing this big city from a distance. Again, this camaraderie that you have with people that's on the ride with you. And so while justice can be rocky and the water can be choppy, there are always these positive and fun elements that's associated with it too. And I can tell you, the rocky waters have been the case here in Champaign-Urbana. While there's been some great progress, we have been still working towards trying to get the city of Champaign to get on board. They are, have various reasons of why they are being hesitant to do it, but we're still pressing on. And again, we have to just have the big picture perspective that Joseph had to try to keep pressing forward and not to get, disappointed in a way where we give up, to not try to be angry or try to, somehow make it an antagonistic kind of thing, but to be like Joseph, have that grace and mercy and love and keep pressing forward despite the rockiness that we may experience. And so, at the end of the day, a life of justice may be difficult at times, but it's more rewarding than I would say is difficult. And we just have to learn how to enjoy the ride, just like my son Amari in this picture is enjoying his ride in his little car, and my granddaughter Amaya is enjoying her tricycle riding at her school as well. And finally, I'll just end on the ultimate person that exemplified and practiced justice, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. This particular slide, I was trying to find a picture of a black Jesus of some kind, just because Jesus has some kind of color with him based on where he was in the world. And this particular picture has what looks like a Jesus figure holding a young child or baby. And it makes you think about the idea of how important it is to raise our children in this idea of justice so that they can grow up and be able to continue this path forward that we need to have in this country. If there's a time we need it more than ever, it's the time is now that we need more people growing up with a mindset that justice is a lifestyle and not just something that happens on special occasions.